I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. When Dennis Carpenter became superintendent of the Lee Summit School District, he proposed diversity training for all staff. The plan received outspoken opposition from members of the community and was rejected by the school board. After months of controversy, the same board did an about-face and approved the same plan. Today, we'll talk with Carpenter about that resistance and why he thinks the school board reversed its decision. Then, proverbs of wisdom that came from the African continent. A K-State professor and Kenyan native shares the words passed down through generations that teach principles we can all learn from. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. After a months-long standoff, the Lee Summit School Board has agreed to spend $97,000 on staff diversity training. Lee Summit School Superintendent Dennis Carpenter had long advocated for the training, but the idea met with unusual resistance from some board members and the community. The standoff over the training had riveted district patrons, and at one point the superintendent threatened to quit when board members balked. But now the training will happen. Superintendent Dennis Carpenter joins me now here in the studio. Superintendent, welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Kraske. It's always a pleasure to have an opportunity to engage with you in this space. Thanks a bunch.
You know, this standoff over the training went on for a long time. Now that the board has finally passed it, are you relieved, drained, bewildered over why it took so long? What are you?
I'm in a space where I'm just ready to move forward on behalf of young people and our staff and our greater community. I think we've had a dialogue that, although it was tough at times, it's been somewhat productive. It's created a space for a conversation that's allowed some individuals to have a voice that might not have had said voices otherwise. And I always pose the question is, how many voices do we need to hear in terms of experiences that may not reflect the greater side of who we are? Mm-hmm. And once we hear those voices, that answer for me is just one voice. Mm-hmm. And once we hear one voice, it's time for us to pause as a district and say, how do we move forward? And now we're at a time to move forward with training for our staff, and we're ready to move forward on behalf of our children. So that's invigorating.
Did you expect this to happen, this backlash against the idea?
I did not. This is a
fairly routine budget item, $97,000. That may sound like a lot of money, but in a budget your size, this was not necessarily, didn't really necessarily stand out.
No, sir. In a budget of $260+ million, you're talking about a rounding error. So it's not a financial issue. It's the difficulty of the conversation. We are a district that is one of the best, if not the best, in the state of Missouri. We have some great students, great families, great teachers. But the challenge is, when you're that good, it's hard to hear some of those things that will cause you to just be a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And that's what this conversation has always been about, is being the best that we can be for all of our students and all of our families.
You know, here's a tough one. Is Lee Summit and the district better off today having gone through this conversation? Or is it a situation where I've heard some chatter that Lee Summit now has been tainted in a way that's going to take a few years to get past?
I don't know if we're better today. I don't know if we're tainted. I think the future will tell that story. How well do we embrace the training will tell that story. Do we become a district that provides greater access and opportunity for all students? And when we do those things and do them well, I've heard referenced many times in my 2 years in terms of the Lee Summit way. But when we do that with the same passion that makes all of us proud to talk about the Lee Summit way, that'll tell the story.
You know, let's back up a minute and tell our listeners what this training will mean for staff diversity, what the staff is going to go through here. What is this staff diversity training all about?
So the training is, you know, oftentimes in a professional development place and space in education, we want to know, what's that technical solution? What can I do right now, go into my classroom and do it tomorrow and try to change outcomes for children? And in a district like ours that's so research rich and resource rich, we don't have a lack of programming. We don't have a lack of what I like to call technical solutions. So this even with all of those solutions that we have in place and all of the resources, we don't always get the bang for the buck that we get, that we want for all children. So what this will allow for is us to do some work that historically school districts have shied away from. And that's the adaptive work of saying what are the matters of the heart? Mm-hmm. What are those things that are adaptive in nature that I can do to reflect, knowing that my beliefs can drive my behaviors and my behaviors can drive my results? So we're really going to do what I like to call that messy work of adaptive leadership, whether it be at the governance level with myself in the school board, whether it be at the district leadership or the building leadership level, or even at the teacher and community level. What are some things that I can reflect on personally and really put my beliefs under a microscope to approach my work with a different lens? That's exciting. But difficult work.
Lee Summit School Superintendent Dennis Carpenter is my guest. At the end of the day, is this just sensitivity training?
No, it's not. I think that there are many elements to this work. This is really looking at some common definition for words like equity and the like. Then you move into this space of how do I then examine policies, procedures to make certain that they are more inclusive in nature? How do I really look at my practices, whether they be around hiring, whether they be around the purchase of curricular resources, whether it be around things as simple as what books are in our libraries? And some of those types of things to make sure that all students are reflected in the curriculum, all students see themselves reflected in the classroom space that makes them more engaged as we move into the 21st century and beyond.
When's this going to begin, or has it already begun?
Has not begun. We were in conversation this week with the company that was selected. They've given us some tentative dates that they're available to begin this training at the board, superintendent, and cabinet level. And this is
Starting there.
That is critical to this type of an implementation, that the Board of Education and the superintendent, they experience this work first, so that when it moves down to building level and the grassroots level, there's some common understanding about what this learning experience is like for our faculty and staff.
So ultimately, I was going to say faculty and staff, your teachers, your staff members, they're all going to go through this at some point.
Well, we only have a one-year agreement with the option for 3 additional years. So my guess is this training will not touch every staff member in year one. But that is the plan and the goal for our staff. It makes us better for all of our students and all of our families.
Is this like a deal where you go off away from your school for a day and sit somewhere else and listen to some conversations and take part in discussions? Or what happens here?
Yes, it's in-person professional development.
Okay.
So staff members will convene in a space, and that professional development is delivered in person by the company that we've selected.
Again, Dennis Carpenter is my guest. He's the superintendent of Lee Summit Schools. We're talking about the big decision, the very controversial decision for the district to spend $97,000 on staff diversity training. If you want to join our conversation, our number 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Why did you think it was a good idea for the staff to undergo this training to begin with? What was your thinking originally?
Well, that's a great question. This training is a part of a unanimously approved board equity plan. And basically, when we looked at our data back in October, one of the first things that we talked to our board about is we need a comprehensive equity plan. And a group of staff members, community members, led by a phenomenal leader in our district, Ms. Smith, they really put together this comprehensive plan. The selection of a thought partner to help us get started in the area of professional development is just one small element of the plan. Mm-hmm. But it's a very, very important element because, again, if this training causes us to put our practices under a microscope and look at them with a different lens, then we can't do anything else until we've done that work, right?
Yeah.
Or until we've begun that work. So it's an important element, but it's only one element in a comprehensive equity plan that we believe over time we'll start to see some achievement gaps start to shrink. We'll start to see kids more reflected in the curriculum, and we'll start to see the types of experiences and successes that we all want for all children.
So from your vantage point, this is clearly very important work.
Important work.
Yeah. Do lots of districts undergo this kind of training?
Absolutely.
There's nothing unusual here, right?
Nothing unusual. You can't go into any national conversation or even the Missouri School Boards Association, the National School Boards Association, the American Association of School Administrators. They're all talking about the equity strand of our work. It's such an important strand of our work as our country continues to become more diverse. How do we reach all students? And it's in all of our best interest to make certain that we prepare each student to the highest degree possible.
Has any other district that you're aware of, Mr. Superintendent, have they gone through this same sort of tumult to get to this decision over diversity training?
There's some dialogue. It doesn't take a long Google search to see that there are some communities that grapple with this type of a work. I think about my good friend Sean Joseph, who was just recently leaving the superintendency in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And when I think about Wausau County in Nevada and my good friend Tracy Anderson and the work that she's doing and Lavelle Brown up in Ithaca, New York, these are folks doing phenomenal work. And I think that work is super important, but oftentimes it comes with a little bit of consternation. And when we talk about all students, we just have to be so clear in the fact that all has to mean all.
How close did you come to quitting over this? Because at one point there was some press about the notion that you were on the brink.
Well, that statement stands on its own merit in terms of the board meeting. But here's what I will say, and I've always said, I'm at a point in my career where I'm not going to be a barrier to the work of effectively educating all young people. And if there's
but
ever
you weren't
a time,
the barrier, it was the school board that was the barrier.
Well, if there was an inability,
at least from your vantage point,
right.
Yeah.
But if there's an inability to get this work moving for young people, and if I can't move this work for young people, then a school district needs to find that leader who can help them do this work, because it's just that important. And I'm just so laser-like focused on what I believe in terms of education and it being one of the primary things that can move all kids into the middle class. And it's the most basic civil right that this country has to offer.
I can't help but wonder what students in the Lee Summit School District thought about all this. What kind of feedback did you get about the parents fighting over an issue like this?
Well, I don't know that I heard feedback relative to parents fighting over the issue. We did have, through this process, some students that put themselves out there with our school board in terms of public comment at board meetings. I have a student advisory group in terms of about 40 students, grades 7 through 12 across the district. This is an issue that they even said was important to them. So, you know, students are sometimes we can learn so much from our young people, and they're more prepared to do the right work sometimes than we are as adults. So it's incumbent upon us to listen to young folks, because in many ways they get things that we don't.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Paul from Kansas City, Missouri. Paul, you're on Up to Date with Superintendent Dennis Carpenter. Good morning.
Hello, sir. You know, really the diversity that you have in place of this training, I am confident that it will affect the quality of education here in this area. But I want to know your opinion, Mr. Superintendent. How is this going to affect all other issues? Because really, education is the biggest issue in this country, and it will resolve all of our other issues: infrastructure, economics, government, healthcare. How is this going to be fruitful?
Yes, sir. When we better prepare all students, you're right, we have a better shot at improving any of the ills that are impacting our country. So when you think about workforce development, and I heard a lot of that in your responses, it behooves all of us to have a highly skilled, highly trained workforce. And that begins in terms of the training element when a child enters a place called school. There's lots of conversation about disadvantages that children experience before they enter the schoolhouse door. But we take all children. And when we take all children, it's incumbent upon us to do all we can to move all students. All it's going to do is continue to have us be that superpower that we've always been in terms of all of our lifetimes.
You know, this is one step for the district, Mr. Superintendent. What's the next step?
Well, I think we get into this training space and then we all start to just look at every area that we're responsible in our school district. And how do we look at that area with an equity lens? For example, if I am experience in this training and I'm in the school nutrition department. Is there something I can do different from a policy standpoint around the cafeteria program? If I'm putting together a new program for students in the district, and let's say that it's a program that offers off-site internships or externships, do I think about it in a way and say, hey, are there some barriers around transportation that I would not have thought about before? Currently, we have program structures in our district where students are advised to take advantage of this program in a place called public school. They need to be able to provide their own transportation, i.e. have a car to participate in an internship. And in a community as resourced as ours, Inequity Lens would tell us that's a barrier for some young folks. So how do we start reimagining our spaces to provide more kids with greater access and greater opportunity? It only makes all of us stronger.
You know, I can't help but note that the Jackson County Sheriff's Department had to offer you security during the course of this controversy. Why?
Yeah, pretty difficult times in terms of some of the narrative and some of the language and some of the commentary that was coming to this superintendent's office or being brought to this superintendent's door. So anytime that happens, I am going to notify the appropriate authorities, whether they be locally Summit authorities or our sheriff here in Jackson County, because my family deserves that. They really deserve that.
How does your family weather this? Because I want to point out that one threat, Mr. Superintendent, that was aimed at you, the caller or the, I'm not sure how it came to you, but the message was you were going to disappear into a lake.
Pretty disappointing and pretty sad. But again, I want to thank, you know, Sheriff Forbes and Chief Forte and Sheriff Forte, both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're in Lee's Summit and in Jackson County. They take these things seriously. And when they take these things seriously, they do what's necessary to start dialogue, whether it be with those individuals or whether it be around things for my family that we deserve as citizens in Lee's Summit.
And your family, how did they weather it?
Well, I got two of the most awesome children anyone can be fortunate enough to have. They're young. They're 7, 6 years old.
So they weren't really.
They're kind of out of
unaware.
Touch.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something we go through and we process through and we maintain our faith and we do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
You were called the race doctor on social media after you proposed this training. How did you feel about that?
Someone needs more information.
Mm-hmm.
Someone doesn't know Dr. Carpenter. They doesn't know that I've spent a career being dedicated to all children across all demographics. And if they took the time to engage more versus spewing hate, they'd learn more.
I want to ask you about one issue in the Lee Summit District. Black students account for 12% of enrollment, but nearly 36% of suspensions. Those numbers are reflective of trends. You know, you see them in suburban school districts across the country. What do you make of that?
There's a conversation that has to be had around that. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at equity training and the like, then we develop some tools that we can place in our toolbox to have an appropriate conversation about those data that you just referenced. And how do we look at discipline and how do we break out those infractions to see, okay, what's causing this disproportionate rate of suspensions and the like? But we need tools to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's what a thought partner like the group that we've called upon can help us with. Mm-hmm. And that's encouraging, but we have to be willing to engage in that conversation.
In theory, should those numbers be roughly equal? I mean, if black students account for 12% of the enrollment, should the suspensions be about 12%?
You would think so, because that's proportionality versus mm-hmm. disproportionality. And so how do we get there? How do we look at discipline infractions and say, this infraction is pretty objective. You either did it or you didn't. But there are some things in school district discipline policies that are subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Put another way, the professional has some latitude in how they look at a matter. So how do we engage in those conversations to talk about, are the objective measures skewed or are the subjective measures of district skewed?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be trained and willing to have those conversations. And that's the great news about this partnership that we're putting in place moving forward.
As you move away from this controversy and begin to move forward, do you feel you have the support of your board moving ahead?
Only the school board can answer that question. I would tell you that I was excited. About 2 weeks ago, we had a two-day institute with the Missouri School Boards Association. We really got into some conversation about what are best practices and what are board responsibilities and what are superintendent responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Sometime when you get into difficult conversations, you know, you lose track of roles and who's really on first base in this particular area. But I hope through all of this, you talked about is Lee Summit better because of the conversation. But I hope through all of this, we can all come together and agree that we have to work together in the most effective way, utilizing best practices, so we're never portrayed like this on the local, the regional, or the national stage again. That's incumbent upon our community.
That's Dennis Carpenter. He's the superintendent of Lee Summit Schools. Mr. Superintendent, thanks for coming in. Sure appreciate it.
Always good.
Good luck moving forward.
Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about African proverbs. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's broadcast, we learned what opportunity zones could mean for economically disadvantaged areas in Kansas City. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow on the show, our film critics are back. They'll offer a list of summer films that range from a baseball documentary to a comedy about diversity. Join us tomorrow for their reviews. Well, in Africa, tradition calls for little pearls of wisdom in the form of proverbs to be passed down from generation to generation, usually from a community's elders. To Sam Chege, these proverbs were like onions with layers of profound understanding that he could peel away and come to a higher understanding of some of life's greatest lessons. Sam Chege was born and raised in Kenya, but he's lived in this country for more than 20 years. Today, he's an associate professor of journalism and mass communication out at Kansas State University. He's also a collector of proverbs from all over Africa that have boosted the quality of his life and helped him focus on what's truly important. Read one a day, Sam Chege says, and after a year, your spirit will be renewed. Sam has gathered many of these proverbs in a new book, Life is God's Best Gift, Wisdom from the Ancestors on Finding Peace and Joy in Today's World. He joins us now from Manhattan, Kansas. Sam, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Read one a day for a year and your spirit will be renewed. Why are proverbs so powerful?
Well, thanks, Steve, for having me. Africa has a rich heritage. Mm-hmm. It is the cradle of mankind. It is also the birthplace of the human race and great civilizations. And our proverbs are filled with enduring life lessons that have universal application, but they are not well known. And that is the purpose of my book. Mm. These may be African proverbs, but they have universal application. They speak to people in different cultures. And so anyone who reads any of these will find a purpose and they can apply it in their own lives.
You know, I was just struck. You grew up listening to proverbs around a fire in Kenya.
Yes.
Describe that scene to us. What was that like for you as a child?
Well, in African culture, it's customary for a child to go and live with their grandparents to enable them to age in dignity, to run errands for them. And in the evenings, we would sit around a fire, and my grandparents, my grandfather and my grandmother, would share stories and proverbs with me, which I found fascinating. And that was the genesis of this project. It opened, those stories and proverbs opened a new world for me, and I marveled at the depth of African wisdom. And when I came here in the U.S., I found that was missing. There was nothing that I, like what I had been accustomed to. And I felt the West was missing out on something. Ancient African wisdom was missing out, was missing from African, from American universities, from American culture, from Western civilization. And I thought, I need to do something because Western civilization is poor for it. Mm. So if I could do something and share this with people out here, maybe they will find something useful in it.
You know, I love the description in your book of growing up poor in Kenya, but you described it as such an idyllic existence. Why?
I call it the scandal of simplicity. In the village, I was born and raised in a house that had no running water, no indoor toilet. My bedroom was next to a goat hearth. You know, when you look at it from a materialistic perspective, it looks very poor. But it was a communal lifestyle. We loved each other. And in the introduction, I'm calling it the scandal of simplicity. Because we tend to view life from a materialistic perspective. We look at you and we judge you based on what you do, what you drive, how you dress. And that's not the life in the village. In the village, what is most important is my relationship to nature and my relationship to my fellow human beings. Hmm. Yes.
You say it was the best life you ever lived.
Yes. It was the best life I ever lived because there was a connection that I shared with other people, a connection that was not defined by my status and standing in society.
I was really struck, too. The principal of the school struck me as the way you described that person as the central figure of the community. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yeah. Nobody needed to tell you that education is the difference maker. You looked around the village and you noticed right away the people who had an education were the people who had a really good life in terms of they had a nice house, he had a nice car, they had some material resources they could share with the rest of us.
So when did you start collecting the proverbs that you have in this book?
I think I was in elementary school when I started looking around. And when I went to high school and university and I gained more resources, in other words, I could go to the library and look at proverbs from Sudan, proverbs from Gambia, proverbs from South Africa. I've always done this, and I think I've been doing it for more than 30 years.
Hmm. Do they vary much, you know, from community to community, country to country, or do you see similarities in these different proverbs?
I see similarities, but what happens is because of early migration, you'll see some variations in proverbs because they adopt elements from the local environment. But the themes tend to be similar.
Well, let's go to some of these proverbs. Here's one from Swaziland. I think it's early in the book. A man who says it cannot be done should not interrupt the man doing it.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Actions speak louder than words.
Here's another one from Ghana. The poorest person is not the one without money, but one without vision.
Vision, yes.
What do you make of that one?
It all starts in the mind, my friend. It all starts in the mind. You may have a lot of resources, but if you have no vision, if you don't know where you're going.
You know, to what extent are these proverbs still repeated today in Africa, in the same villages where you came from?
They are repeated. Some of them evolve with time. But think of it, Steve. Take any of those and transport it to the West. And it can be applied here because you need a vision to go to school. You need a vision to amount to something in your career so that there's nothing uniquely African about some of these proverbs. They are universal.
Yeah. Was it hard to collect these things? Were they easy to come up with, or did you have to go searching for them?
It took about 3 years to put them together in the form of a book because
wow.
What I was doing, I was looking at their relevance to the Western audience.
Ah, yes.
So you start from the other way. Are there some universal themes? Yes. For example, there's one that says, suicide kills the people who love you. Now, do we have suicide problems here?
Yeah,
of course.
Of course.
It's a universal problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so it may be a proverb from Kenya, but it speaks to a universal problem.
Sam Chege is my guest. His new book, Life is God's Best Gift, Wisdom from the Ancestors on Finding Peace and Joy in Today's World. Why did you come to America, and when did you come?
When I graduated from the University of Nairobi, I worked as a journalist. but I wanted to go to graduate school. In those days, we did not have any graduate schools teaching journalism in Kenya. You had to travel outside the country. And I found a school, University of Iowa. I'm a Hawkeye. And I applied and went there for my master's. That was in 1994. After studying for my master's, there were still some problems. I wanted to find a way to apply communication to development challenges in Kenya. So a master's wasn't enough for me. I felt I needed a PhD, so I went to South Carolina, University of South Carolina, and got my PhD.
Well, where did the interest in journalism come from?
When I was growing up, I found my village, we grow coffee there. And middlemen exploit coffee farmers. And I remember writing a story that I published in a Kenyan newspaper when I was in high school, addressing the issue of coffee farming, the problems facing them. That story was published. And I found that communication was a powerful way of capturing problems at the grassroots, problems at the village level, and sharing them with the policymakers. And I discovered the power of communication. Huh. And from then on, I wanted to be a writer, a journalist.
You know, this notion, Sam, you were saying it in your village in Africa, people there were not judged by their material wealth or status. Have you found spaces here in our culture that might be similar to that, or has that proven elusive to you?
You know, when I went to the University of Iowa, I discovered a community there in a place called Kelowna. It's the Amish community. That was the closest I have seen here to the village life.
Have you spent time there?
Oh, yes, because goat meat is an African delicacy. Don't tell that to my students because they say it's pets. But goat meat is an African delicacy. And when I wanted a goat, I would go to the Amish people. And I became friends with them. And they would give me the goat meat, but I would spend time with them talking about their culture. And it reminded me about the village. I know they are misunderstood, but I get them.
Do you think we're missing the boat on some level here?
I think the focus on the material things, in a way, it takes away some of our, you know, the essence of life. So that it's good to have a job. It's good to go to school. It's good to have money. But there's more to life than the material stuff.
Yeah.
And I always want to know who my neighbor is, what he interests him, you know, how he defines himself. I talk to my neighbors. I don't even know what they do in life, but I know who they are.
Yeah, yeah. I like this one from the book, this proverb. Old men sit in the shade because they planted a tree many years before.
Thank you. Plan ahead. Plan ahead so you don't find yourself broke in retirement.
I also like this one. The sun does not forget a village just because it is small.
Yes. So do not underestimate yourself because of your size or maybe because of your heritage or background.
This one is from Zambia. God speaks to those who are silent enough to listen, and I wish more people took that one to heart.
Yes, I went to a place sometimes, and we are getting in and sitting down, and you realize that in this culture and in many other cultures, we are uncomfortable with silence. So if there's no one speaking, we tend to put some music on.
Yes, yes.
While we wait for the event to start. And you realize we talk, you know, maybe why are we uncomfortable with silence? You know, God speaks in whispers, and you won't hear that whisper if you're always playing music or talking about the weather, games, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to chase away. What are you running away from your own shadow, from your own silence?
You know, I tell my students this a lot, my own journalism students, Sam, we should compare notes sometimes, but, you know, when you're doing an interview sometimes, it's often just best to keep your mouth shut to let the person you're interviewing talk more. And yes. I need to do that more often here on the radio station sometimes, too. I try to remind myself all the time of that one.
Yes.
From Kenya, do not say the first thing that comes to your mind.
Yes. Again, that has a universal application, right?
Yeah.
Also, how many times have you typed something on social media and hit send only to say, oh my God, I should have waited.
Should not have said that. Absolutely.
Thank you. Also
from Kenya, you should never forget your neighbor when you invite people to come to the feast.
Yes. Because it's all about good neighborliness. And if you do that, maybe no one will call the police on you. That the party is noisy. You know, it's common sense.
This one is from Zimbabwe. Mm. The axe forgets, the tree remembers.
Thank you. It never forgets. Yes.
I'm wondering, are there certain ones that have stuck with you throughout the years?
Oh, man, yes. When I was a young man and I wasn't married, I always remembered this one. A man who hangs around a beautiful girl without saying a word ends up fetching water for guests at her wedding. So speak up, man. Speak up. If you're interested, speak up. You know, in a nice way.
What other ones stick with you?
My favorite one is...
Please.
An elder who is sitting down on a stool can see farther than a boy perched in a tree. In other words, wisdom comes with experience.
I love that one.
Yes. In this society, we tend to devalue people who are old and they are not working. In the African society, old people sit at the pinnacle of the family structure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have seen everything.
Has that respect for elders, does that endure today in Africa? Has that changed at all? Yeah.
No, it's still there. And that's something you notice when you cross the Atlantic and you come over. Here, because of this, you know, it's a capitalist society. We value people who have energy and resources and they can work. And if you're not in the workforce, we tend to forget you. That's the opposite in Africa. The elders sit at the pinnacle of society. And I wish we could remember that, you know, and change some of that. So that is my favorite proverb. In fact, there's another one that's closely related to that. And it says, when an old man dies, a library burns to the ground.
That's terrific. That's terrific. Yes. Sam Chege's new book, Life is God's Best Gift, Wisdom from the Ancestors on Finding Peace and Joy in Today's World. Sam, I really enjoyed having you. I love the book. I love some of the great proverbs in here, and I sure appreciate you sharing them with us.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me.
That's Sam Chege. He's on the faculty of Kansas State University in Manhattan. Coming up, Brian McTavish and some cool stuff to do on your weekend. Man, I haven't heard that song in a long time. Brian McTavish is here to run through some fun stuff to do on this big weekend before the 4th of July coming up in a few days. And welcome back. How are you?
I am great.
Welcome.
I am great. And if you want to hear that song,
Flock of Seagulls.
Live.
That's the group.
They're here.
Flock
of Seagulls. You can run, but you can't hide from Flock of Seagulls' first and biggest hit.
Yes.
I Ran. Well, you could try to hide, but why bother? Especially if you show up around 6 or 7 o'clock if you want to catch opening band The Zeros at Town Center Plaza tonight. 6 to 9:30 tonight, Town Center Plaza.
They're just playing outside the complex?
Well, Flock of Seagulls these days, the only original member is former Liverpool hairdresser Mike Score. He's the man who you're hearing singing from that long ago, early 80s hit. Now,
so the lead vocalist is still
He's the lead vocalist now. His iconic early 1980s hairdo, which I'm sure you're seeing in your mind even as I speak, but if not, let me describe it as others have. A flamboyant, perhaps dramatic blonde do with these crazy elevated wings, and the key element, a downward swoop in the middle of his forehead covering one eye. Ooh.
Ooh.
Not happening anymore. He's super bald. But, but regarding Iran, a quote that I culled from the worldwide you-know-what, he says, on Iran, this big hit that they had on MTV and later, I love it and I hate it all at once, Mike Score says. He says, I love it because it was a big hit and I like playing it to people who love it, but I hate it because I don't think it's the best song we've ever written, to which I say, tough luck, you can't have everything. Quick story, super quick story.
Yes.
I saw Flock of Seagulls sometime in the early 80s when they were still kind of a big deal, right, and he had the crazy hairdo.
Right.
Now, it may have been the loudest concert I have ever attended.
Oh my God. Wow.
And for proof, I will submit, part of the group I attended the concert with included a very pregnant woman. Stop me when you think you know where I'm going with this.
Uh-oh.
She had to leave the show and not return minutes into the show because her future daughter was wildly kicking in her womb in response to the overpowering sonic barrage.
Wow.
So
be forewarned.
No. Here's the thing. It's going to be a lot quieter tonight at Flock of Seagulls concert because he's 60, and a lot of people there will be 60. Town Center Plaza, Leawood tonight.
That's the song of Carole King.
Oh, by
golly. The legendary Carole King.
Oh, the super ultra mega legendary,
yes.
Carole King. Okay, on stage, it's called Beautiful, the Carole King musical. It's the biographical stage musical about the legendary singer-songwriter Carole King. It's on stage tonight through Sunday, 8 o'clock at night, Starlight Theater. The show tells the true, kind of hard to believe it's true when you see it, but it is. And why would they lie, right? It's the show tells the true story of Carole King's rise to stardom, right? So she started out as this behind-the-scenes hit songwriter with her boyfriend slash soon-to-be husband, Jerry Goffin. It starts out there, tells her rise, and obviously it sort of builds up to this stupendously successful solo debut album, which we love talking about
Tapestry.
On Up to Date. Tapestry!
Yeah.
Early 1970s was, let's face it, Tapestry basically defined the whole singer-songwriter genre in a majorly mainstream way.
Yeah, I interviewed her once.
Oh.
Here in town for Up to Date, Steven Steigman and I went and saw her at a fundraiser for John Kerry in 2004. And she just wanted to talk about John Kerry.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about her career. And we had to turn off the microphone and sort of talk about it for a few minutes.
Okay.
She was getting a little irritated with me.
Leave the microphone on. Let's not be irritated for a few more seconds.
Yeah.
Let's run down some of the great classic tunes that she wrote or co-wrote. Mostly early on for other groups, like Take Good Care of My Baby, a hit for Bobby V, Will You Love Me Tomorrow, a hit for the Shirelles, Up on the Roof, a hit by the Drifters, The Locomotion, a hit for Little Ava, One Fine Day, the Chiffons, and then all of those great tunes on Tapestry, It's Too Late, So Far Away, You've Got a Friend, which she recorded before James Taylor's huge hit, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, I Feel the Earth Move, you, Steve, might feel the earth move too at Beautiful, the Carole King musical. Wow.
Well, let's go to Giggle with Gilda, this presents Drew Lynch,
a comedy thing here.
Yeah. Tell us about Drew
Lynch.
I'm going
to explain it to you. Okay, here are the particulars. It's Giggle with Gilda, right? And it features comedian Drew Lynch. It's the annual comedy benefit to support the diverse needs of cancer patients in the community. It's 8:30 Friday night at the Arbus Bank Theater at the Midland. Let's talk a little bit about stand-up comic Drew Lynch. He's 27. Hmm. He won the Golden Buzzer Prize on TV's America's Got Talent a few years ago.
Oh, really?
At age 20, Lynch suffered an injury while playing softball, of all things, but, you know, it can't happen. He developed a stutter. So he started to pursue a career as a stand-up comic. He wanted to show the world that anything that happens to you, a bad thing even, can be changed into a super positive thing. So let's listen a little bit. Here's Drew Lynch, funny man Drew Lynch, explaining how he's actually more aware of his height these days than his stutter.
I'm not really self-conscious about my voice as I am my height. Like I had gone up to a girl one time, and before I could say anything, she was like, "You're too short." And I was like, well, people seem to enjoy life, and they say that's too short.
So he is a sweet, as you can tell,
yes.
Gentle, as you can tell, and as you can tell, I suspect, a highly skilled stand-up comic. Lynch's YouTube channel, get this, more than 1.6 million subscribers, and I know you're working on this yourself.
Wow.
You also would like to have more than 1 million hits on your YouTube channel.
Yes, I would.
You're working on that. So I would highly encourage everyone to check it out. Not only is he a funny guy, in a sweet, sincere, different way, but once again, it is the all-important annual comedy benefit to support Giggle with Gilda, which is presented by Gilda's Club right here in Kansas City,
right.
Friday at the Artist.
Okay, let's talk about fireworks.
Let's talk about fireworks.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the weekend before the 4th.
Quickly.
Well, kind of like the fireworks, they fizzle, right?
Yes.
Okay, real quickly, I'll just try to, you just stop me when you have to. 8 weekend area fireworks displays. Can we just run them down real quick?
Yes, please.
Okay, Friday. So much more about it. Here we go. Friday, Bonner Blast at Kelly Murphy Park in Bonner Springs. Parked at Stump Park in Shawnee. Lots of food trucks. There's the Independence Day celebration at the Kenneth W. Bernard Community Park in Lansing. That's Friday. Saturday, here it comes. Booms and Blooms at Powell Gardens in Kingsville. Real briefly, this is the last year for Booms and Blooms. Next year, they're going to do like more than one event. So if it rains out, they can like do different things at different times. So get down there. Booms and Blooms Saturday night. Family Fireworks Spectacular at the Cass County Fairgrounds in Pleasant Hill. Freedom Fest at Hit Park in Greenwood. Lights on the Lake, at Osawatomie City Lake.
Wow.
And last but not least, Spirit of America Celebration at Recreation Park in Raymore. And kids, don't pick up anything that looks like, what's that thing you wave around?
Yeah. Like a firework.
Don't pick them
firecracker.
Up. Firecracker. Don't
pick them up. And finally today. Oh, this is kind of cute.
You like
this? The 100th wedding anniversary of Harry and Bess Truman.
Yes.
Can you believe it?
Yeah. Well, I wonder how many couples have made it that long.
Yes.
Probably none. Anyway, yeah. Harry and Bess Truman's 100th wedding anniversary, old-fashioned love. Couples are invited to renew their marriage vows in a public ceremony. You can do it or you can watch it. It'll be followed by a reception with dessert and a champagne toast to, yes, Harry and Bess's platinum anniversary. It happens at 6 o'clock Friday. It's an hour and a half, 6 to 7:30 Friday. Where else but the Harry S. Truman Presidential Library and
that's
Museum.
Brian McTavish's weekend to-do list. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, he was part of the GOP for over 15 years as a Missouri congressman. We'll ask Tom Coleman why he wants to impeach President Trump. Join us tomorrow for that conversation. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.